Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Michael Tanner is the VP of Finance and Analysis for Trevino Resources in Pecos Country Operating. He is the co-founder of the Sandstone Group, which focuses on investment and advisory services for the oil and gas industry. Welcome to the show, Michael.
Awesome, George. Thanks for having me. This will be a good time.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal lives, more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Oh, gosh. So as you mentioned, I'm a full career in the oil and gas business. Really got started in it by accident. Took a class in college, Introduction to Petroleum. It was like, holy smokes, this is something I'm actually really, really interested in. Kind of combines two things I really like, which is the engineering and math side of the business. But also at the end of the day, everything comes down to the economics of, hey, are we going to drill a well or are we not? So really kind of combines two of the passions I get to do. Based out of here in Dallas, Texas, we operate a bunch of fields about less than 2 hours away. So it's a great local place. Grew up in Colorado. So I'm actually somewhat newish to Texas. I'm one of those transplants that came about 4 or 5 years ago that everybody complains about. But I feel like I'm wearing the Texas community proud. But so just excited.
Excellent. So are we going to drill a well or not? Is it always obvious? I can't imagine there's probably tons of time where you're like, I'm just not sure.
Well, there's a lot that I think goes into that. I think everything starts with geology. Hey, do we actually think there's oil there? And as you can imagine, 100, 200 years ago, and they were just poking holes in the ground praying. You know, sometimes we find these old oil fields that have been producing since 1930, and I think back to when they were making that decision, like, holy, so like, how did they know? They were just, and sometimes they did. Now, a lot of that, you know, some of it also had to do with, you know, there are different types of geological formations that we call outcrops, where you can actually see the formation coming out of the ground. Ironically, you can think of the Grand Canyon as just, in geology, we call that an outcrop. And it doesn't look like it, but you can actually, if you could see the layers, and they're like, oh, okay, cool. Now I could maybe get an idea of when this bends back into the ground, there may or may not be some stuff here. But nowadays, pretty much all the oil is mapped. And so really what it is it's a game of how much is it going to cost me to extract it? And how much do I think it's going to produce? And there's a fine line at which, hey, I know I could get some oil here, but I'm actually not convinced it's actually going to make a profit. And then it's going to make all my downstream stakeholders a profit, which is really where we get into within the asset management space and our partners is, okay, great. We might be able to turn a little bit of a profit on it, but are we going to be able to get all of our stakeholders downstream from, you know, investors in our projects to all of our purchasers who actually come and buy this oil? Because you can imagine, you know, if we sell it for X price, it gets sold, you know, to the midstream company is Y, it goes to the refiner at Z, and then finally as it gets down to the consumer and you see it at the gas pump, there's a margin at each of that step baked in. So that's really, you know, and that's really the thing. And to be honest, that as we record this today, oil has actually taken a tumble over the last 4 or 5 days as we've seen what's going on with tariffs and the overall economy. It's a really interesting actually time to be doing this because there's a lot of extemporaneous factors that I think are affecting it. I think, you know, what you're going to be seeing in the next couple months is that thesis really be tested from at what point are these companies going to actually, you know, what we hear from the administration right now is drill, baby, drill. That's what that, you know, and the interesting part is companies have sort of learned that lesson from, you know, the mid-2000s was the time of drill, baby, drill. And then they realized, well, we're not making profit, baby, profit. So then they switched their mantra and said, well, actually going to try to make some money here. Novel concept, make a little money. Who would have thought? And then when And so in that shift, people really took in the idea of, okay, we don't just want to break even on this well. We're not just going to grow oil production for the sake of growing oil production. We got to make a little money off. We're not just going to, you know, I'm sure we have a lot of real estate people listening. We're not just going to, you know, build doors for the sake of building doors. I got to make sure that that next door is actually profitable in my overall portfolio. And so when that happened, you saw rig counts drop substantially because, well, now all of a sudden, you know, companies are doing things to maximize the profit they make on a well. It's when we saw the jump from 1 mile horizontal laterals to now they're drilling 3 and even 4 mile horizontal laterals because the marginal cost of drilling an extra mile on a lateral is actually a little bit less than it would be if you just, you know, stuck it at your normal length. And so when Trump was running and when he was advertising this policy of drill baby drill, I think everyone in the business understood the sentiment of, yeah, we want to drive oil prices down. That does affect inflation. But in the end of the day, if at $55 or $60 oil where we stand today, there's not many places in the United States specifically where you can actually make not just break even, but actually make a return on it. Because no one's going to build an apartment complex if I tell you you're just going to break even. You're going to put $10 in and you're going to get $10 out in 3 years. Well, no one's going to do that. They're going to say, well, I need to wait until I can get $15 out. And that's the same way in the oil and gas business. No one is necessarily just trying to drill a well to break even. They're waiting for some threshold, whether it's IRR. We could talk all day how I think that's a terrible metric to use. I think, you know, multiple uninvested capital is a much better long-term growth-minded metric to use. But, you know, if I can't get a 1.8 or a 2.0 multiple on my invested capital, well, I'm not even going to bother this. I'm just going to wait for oil prices to appreciate. So there's a lot of really interesting dynamics in there. But to kind of get back to what your question was is, you know, how much is that well going to cost and how much do I think is going to come out of the ground?
Yeah. Yeah, I love how a lot of the time you can just reduce things down to pretty simple. But to your point, there's so many different stakeholders and variables that are going into this. Was there a time where people were just drilling holes because they wanted to make sure that they could keep their crews together?
Yeah. So the long and the short history of the United States oil business was obviously you got the you know, the 80s and the 90s were, you know, really the technological revolution. You know, we went from just mainly focusing on vertical wells in the late 80s and being really reliant on what OPEC did to the U.S. really growing its oil and gas production to the point where by the early 2000s, we became, you know, one of the larger oil, you know, players in this space. The reliance on OPEC did drop a little bit. You got into the early 2000s, and that's really when what I would say is kind of the peak technological shift, which is where everybody went from drilling vertical wells to drilling the traditional horizontal well, where you can imagine you go drill down 5,000 feet, you turn the bit, and now you drill horizontally for a given length. And then that was at the same time. And that was at the same time people were developing the hydraulic fracturing techniques, or what we would call fracking, where it's, okay, now instead of just drilling horizontally to increase my contact with the reservoir, I need a way to stimulate that reservoir because the rock we're actually drilling in is really tight. It doesn't flow naturally. I mean, when I first got into the business, I just figured you drill a hole and you hit a pool of oil. Then you produce that pool of oil until it's dry. Not quite how it works. You can think of it that way, but the fluid doesn't necessarily move as freely as it's just sitting in a pool that's down there that's like in, you know, like your pool out back in your backyard. Not quite how it works. So when these methods like hydraulic fracturing came in, they really unlocked a lot of these different oil and gas reservoirs that could produce oil but shouldn't naturally flow. Obviously, you've got to get oil flowing into the wellbore so that you can eventually get it to surface. And so those type of techniques really unlocked this idea of, oh, now there are all of these new oil and gas reservoirs. The term shale oil became a thing because now we can use horizontal drilling layered over hydraulic fracturing to actually go attack these horizontal plays. West Texas turned from really, really turned up the Permian Basin, became the hotbed for oil and gas production. I mean, really in the 80s, the 90s, you know, East Texas was slightly more prolific in terms of oil production than West Texas, mainly because what was in West Texas was all of the shale, which got all of the love in the 2000s. And then that really became the theme from, 2005 to say 2015 was the idea, was really drill, baby, drill, and increase production for the sake of increasing production. Financialization became a big thing. A lot of oil and gas companies went public, not just the large caps that we think about, but the what we would call the independents and the small caps. There was a drive to become a publicly traded company. And the reward from the capital markets was showing every quarter you were increasing production. And so that was the metric everybody was using. Hey, we need to be increasing production quarter over quarter by all means. And that's just like saying we're going to increase doors in a real estate portfolio by all means cost. And eventually somebody looked and said, well, wait a second here. No one's actually making money on this. You're drilling a well for $10 million and your present value discounted at 10%, which is a traditional way an oil and gas well is valued, is $8.5 million. Sure, you increased your reserves by 2%, but
buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
How does PwC take your company to the leading edge? We bring the sharpest minds in tech to your team, so you can bring the ideas that will transform your business. We are passionate about your industry, so you can walk into any room with every advantage. We're with you every step of the way, so you can know you're headed in the right direction. At PwC, we build for what's next, so you can get there now. Let's get started at pwc.com/us/leading edge.
You're right. You're not actually going to turn a profit on this. Combine that with 2014 was when OPEC really came back into the picture. OPEC had really kind of been put on the back burner at the shale revolution because the United States, and Russia really took this technology and began to drive oil production from their countries higher. For those who weren't in the oil business, this was a tough time because OPEC decided to do a little bit about what they're doing right now, which is flood the market. They announced they're gonna increase oil production by, I think it was, 900,000 barrels a day per month for four straight months, drove oil prices down from the high 80s all the way down to the mid 40s. And it stood there for 3-4 years, really before before things turned around a little bit. Then we had COVID. And so then that switched. So now all of a sudden, prices now drop on everybody. Sure, at $80 oil, companies and really capital markets were okay giving up a little bit of giving up some profit if they were able to see balance sheets grow, reserves grow, if banks were willing to lend off, your oil and gas reserves. But then all of a sudden, now when oil goes from 80 to 40 and whatever quote unquote profit you might have gets absolutely eaten up. Well, now that mantra just switches and capital markets started hurting folks for just growing production for production's sake's growth. You saw a swath of bankruptcies. We could sit here for 20 minutes and rattle off names of old companies I used to cover in my equity research days that are no longer here or got merged or got sold for parts because they were focused so much on production without that underlying profitability metric, and the capital markets flipped on them. They could no longer raise the debt to go drill these wells. They no longer could go get, short-term financing, which is big in the business. They could no longer make these large equity raises stock split to the high heavens to fund all of their new exploration stuff. And that really shifted the business from, again, like I said, drill, baby, drill, to profit, profit, profit. COVID comes in and hits. That kind of upends the market a little bit. I wouldn't say from a theoretical future supply and demand. And that's the other thing to think about oil and gas and how oil and gas are priced is it's a commodity. It's a supply and demand, but it's really the future forecasted supply and demand. It's not necessarily today's supply and demand because, Adam Smith would say, if you go back to the early 1900s, he would say today everything is in balance. We're right exactly where we need to be today. the reason why commodities move is because tomorrow we think something's going to upend. So COVID, all COVID really did was just say, we think demand is absolutely going to crater. And it did for a bit, but it rebounded actually great. And we'd been sitting in the $70, $80 range, obviously with what's going on right now in tariffs. And then OPEC coming back in a little bit and announcing they're going to kind of, you know, put not the nail in the coffin, but pour a little fuel on the fire for some of this, you know, economic, you know, uncertainty. I think that's happening around with the increase of production has really kind of led us to where we are today. And it's only going to get more interesting. It's one of the reasons I love this business, because it's constantly changing. And you know, if you're sitting on your hands using the same strategies you were 5 years ago, you're going to find yourself with your pants down.
Well, you clearly spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff. There's no doubt about that. How common is it how has the world of investing changed, or opportunities for regular investors, for accredited investors to come into this space?
Absolutely. So, you know, if you're in the real estate market, you're familiar with the traditional kind of real estate syndication. Let's, you know, pool up some capital between 15 to 20 investors, and we're going to go, you know, buy this apartment complex. And that had been kind of the way real estate investment had worked for, you know, really ever since the reg deregulations really switched. That same thing is actually available in the oil and gas business. Now, a lot of times it doesn't get maybe the love that it should, because people think investing in oil, they think they're buying oil futures. Well, a lot of the times you're not doing that. You're either investing in oil and gas wells, or you're actually investing in oil and gas production. And there's a few different ways to get in on it. But mainly in the alternative oil and gas investment space, you've got a few different ways to get into the business. You know, the way that most people, specifically if you're coming from a real estate background, get exposed to the oil and gas business is through mineral rights, which is basically buying the deeds to the leases that produce oil and gas. So you can imagine if, George, if you own some minerals, or you owned a plot of land that also owned the minerals underneath you, well, if an oil and gas company wanted to come drill on your land, they could. You'd lease them your minerals, and you would give them only 75% of the revenue that comes out of the ground. You'd actually keep 25% for yourself. And so it acts very similar, like, you know, I don't know the exact term. I think it's like taking over deeds on people's properties. I've talked to a few real estate people who, when they first get into the business, they're like, oh yeah, it's exactly like buying notes. That's what it is, buying notes. Because it's all you're doing. You're just buying a piece of paper that says, I own these mineral rights, and if anybody wants to come lease them from me, they owe me a royalty on top of that. That's what I kind of call level one investing, which is great, but it's more of a cash flow play. And really, with mineral rights, you don't control if an oil company drills. Because think about it, if I own mineral, you know, my family owns mineral rights in Montana on a ranch. Hey, nobody drilling on that. So those mineral rights are worth a heck, you know, a whole stinking zero. Now, if somebody were to come drill on them, or they found oil, now all of a sudden they become valuable. So really, when you own minerals, you're at the mercy of the oil and gas company to come in and exploit those minerals, unless you would decide you want to go drill a well yourself. So really, when you're buying minerals, all you're doing is hoping for a oil and gas price appreciation. And I tell people, if you're trying to gamble on the price of oil, you just go to Vegas. You're gonna have a much better time gambling on the price of oil. Like everybody in the asset management space, we've dabbled in crude oil futures trading. You're gonna have better luck going to play roulette down in Vegas. I promise you that. You're not gonna be able to time the market correctly, at least over a short term or a medium term. Maybe over the long term, you'll get the trend right. And so then the next level people get down is they go buy a producing oil and gas field. And so that's kind of, you know, one big area of kind of the oil and gas syndication space, where somebody says, hey, I've got, you know, 1,000 barrels of oil a day that's flowing. I'm going to go purchase that, ideally at a discount, so that then when I turn around and market this into syndication, there's some alpha. And then there are some other things you can do, lower expenses. It's similar to kind of not a fix and flip, but a buy a real estate property and rehab it a little bit. It's not a new up development, but I see some arbitrage. current person who owns it might need the money, so they're willing to take a discount. I know I can come in here, I can lower the operating expenses, I can operate it for a little bit cheaper, I can, you know, change up a lot of the, you know, some of the underlying things that we're doing, and actually turn this from a maybe a break-even project to a project that actually has a little bit of alpha in it. And we do that all the time. We have specific funds and projects in which we go and just solely buy producing assets, because generally they're what we would call kind of cash flow heavy machines. Everything we're doing on that strategy is focused on maximizing cash flow, both for us and then also our, you know, our investors. And, you know, we do a little bit of both. We do projects where they're just ourselves, and then we also do projects where we'll bring in partners on that. So, but whenever we get into a producing oil field, we're focused specifically on how do we maximize the cash flow of that. And then there's the kind of the other big component to the oil and gas investing space, and that's what we'd call drilling opportunities or drill cos, which is, hey, we're going to go put together some capital and we're actually going to go drill a well. We're going to do an upstart development. We're going to go build an apartment complex. It works the same way. There's this flat piece of land. We're going to go drill four wells there. That's about primarily what we do. We do, I'd say, about 70% of the projects we do are on the drilling side, and about 30% on the producing side. And those are, you know, those have a couple benefits. One, you have a lot more upside if you're looking for a more high growth style investment, because, you know, not that we're going to hit an oil well and you're going to see oil spewing out of the ground, but the concept is still relatively the same. Hey, we think we know what this oil well is going to produce, but at the end of the day, we're not sure. There's a range of production that it could hit. And going back to what we first talked about, how much is it going to cost us to drill this well kind of allows us to hedge the risk one way or the other. The other thing that really excites, you know, investors and why most investors tend to choose going into the drilling space when they invest rather than the production space is the tax benefits. And this is something that when I first heard about this, you know, years and years ago, I thought, to be honest, someone was joking with me. And we get a lot of our current partners who get into the space for the tax benefits. You know, when we first tell them about them, they're like, you're kidding me, right? This can't be real. Because really what you're allowed to do is anything and you know, any dollar that gets put into the ground. And what I mean by that is your IDCs, your intangible drilling costs, your intangible completion costs, and any costs that it takes us to actually drill the well. Think pipe, think the rig, think anything that goes into the ground is 100% tax deductible, which is crazy to me. When I first heard that, I was like, "No, there's no way." And it really is true. And so what that works backwards is if I go drill a well, usually about 70% of the capital that is used to drill a well qualifies for an IDC and ICC credit. So you can imagine in a syndication that's just drilling wells, that overall syndication will actually flow back to the investors somewhere in that 70% tax deduction range. And it can honestly be a lot higher. We've actually averaged about 82 to 84% ourselves over the last 3 years because, you know, there are certain things that aren't tax deductible, but as long as it's going into the ground, you can write that off. And that has massive advantages, one, for a return profile, because now all of a sudden we can theoretically get you your money back in year one if you would count the tax deduction. Now, we can argue that I think that's a little bit scammy when people say, well, I got you a return in the first year. It's like, you got me a tax deduction. There's other ways I can go get a tax deduction. So maybe we should focus on more of a cash on cash side. But for people who do have massive tax benefit or a tax liability, you know, oil and gas, specifically drilling, is a great, great product to go into. And then also there is something to be said about kind of just diversifying your portfolio. You know, I love oil and gas, but I'd be a fool if I had all of my money in oil and gas. I've got it spread out. Got a little bit in real estate. I've got a little bit in the stock market, which if you can see behind me, maybe not a good thing today. But so those are really the two ways we tend to focus most of our projects on the drilling side. But there is, you know, getting into the producing fields. But, you know, from the drilling side, you get great tax benefits, great diversification, and, you know, you're an equity owner in oil and gas wells, which means you do get those monthly dividends.
Beautiful. Is there a typical time horizon for these investments?
So it depends. And I say it depends because it all comes back to the strategy of the project. So there are some projects that we go in and drill and say fairly confidently we're going to be able to divest this in 3 to 5 years because of where it's located, who some of the offset operators are around us. There are other projects where we go into it and say, actually, I don't think we're going to divest this. Or if we do divest this, it's going to be on a time scale of 7 to 10 years. And to be honest, the project that we have right now, we actually aren't marketing as a divestiture event. We're actually saying this is going to be just a buy and hold and cash flow for the next 25 years because these wells will produce for 25 years. Obviously, in year 24, it's going to be less than it would be in year two. But so it really depends on the strategy of the project. And part of the reason I've really driven Trevino and driven our strategy that way is because I kind of cut my chops in some of the larger oil and gas syndications, specifically on the finance side. And to be honest, I've seen the dark side of, oh man, these metrics look okay. But if we just throw a divestiture event in here in year eight, well, guess what? Now you can jack these numbers up. And maybe that's true. Maybe you know you can divest, but there's so many unknowns with a divestiture event that unless I have really clear line of sight to, I've actually talked with somebody who would purchase this, I know what their buying parameters are, I know how they value properties, and ultimately I have a good sense of where I think oil prices will be in 5 years, which nobody does, so that's usually always excludes me. I really have a hard time putting a divestiture event in there, and generally what we tell our investors is we'd love to divest. If somebody tomorrow came to buy one of our property and it met or exceed the return metrics that we've shown you in our material, then yeah, we'll sell it tomorrow. But that's not the plan. And if for the next 25 years you're receiving a dividend check from us, that's really what you should be expecting.
Makes sense. Well, Michael, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you? How can they engage? And where can they learn about different opportunities to potentially invest?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can check us out at TrevinoResources.com, PecosCountryOperating.com, which is our operating company. And I'm sure I'll slip you a link. Maybe they can click on that, make it a little easier. But no, appreciate it, George. We could go on for hours about this, so I love it.
Excellent. Well, if you enjoyed as much as I did, show Michael your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to TrevinoResources.com, and we'll add some extra links down in the notes of the show to make it a little bit easier. But check it out and see if it's a good opportunity. Certainly, I know that I've learned a ton just in the short amount of time that we talked, and it's fascinating to learn about new industries and new opportunities to be saving on taxes and making some money. So thanks again, Michael.
Yeah, thank you, George.
Till next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.